Hello, I'm here with Stefan Jetot from Paris Sorbonne University. We're talking a bit about some things that I'm into history. Let's start off with, what made you decide to study history?
Well, thank you for the question. I think the interest in history first comes from the pleasure of reading and telling stories. And there is, I think, a continuum between literature and history. Both are hinged upon an interaction between the past and the present of the writing. When one is puzzled by the uncertainties and the confusing experience of the present, of our daily life, many feels the need to connect and to create a discourse which fills a gap between our daily experience and the past, which has the advantage of being more manageable and more reassuringly. I am thinking in particular of certain writers such as Balzac, Hugo, and more recently Coetzee or Sibbald. They all address the relation between the past and their present time. Now, of course, needless to say that history nourishes a distinctive narrative. It has to be constrained by valid sources and a certain ethos. One has to reconstitute the genuine experience of the past through a well-defined method. It is not about bringing a definitive account of what happened, but rather to gather enough evidence or hints, one might say, in order to render past experience of war, of convictions and ideas, and or of former way of living. Voices of the past help us to make sense in a not too simplistic way of our present time. To give a concrete example, the first historical books I read were on the Vietnam War. I was looking for some answers to understand why, as a kid growing in the 1980s, the US were both an attractive example and a frightening superpower. So in a sense, complexity and niceties of the past help me to confront the contradiction of the present. This also explains why history has to be written again for every generation. So I hope it's answered this question.
It's quite interesting that you put up the link between history and literature.
Yeah.
As I found that historians either try to pretend that there's no link whatsoever and it's all very empirical, very factually true, mm-hmm. or you end up with people like Hayden White who are like, it's all just literature, we can't really know what happened in the past, it's just us telling stories.
Yeah, I think we have to accept this link between literature and history. Not because there is the question of narrative, but there is the issue about the facts and how facts are being constructed. And also one thing we should be wary of is the pretend that the historian is like a judge who would be, you know, evaluating the deeds and of historical actors. I think that would be a mistake to pretend to be able to see from above what happened in the past. It's more about feeling and experience of the past, of how the actors were living through their time.
Okay. So is that partly why you think studying history is important, is this ability to make sense of our chaos in our present? And
Yes, I think, I think that the question of the utility of history is easier to answer. And this is a question that one has to give to, well, to make to the historian, the students. Mm-hmm. Many won't become academics, they will just mm-hmm. Spend 2 years or 3 years learning history and then they will disappear. So I try to give them some, my personal opinion of the interest of studying history. Probably two answers would come to my mind. I think that the first one would be that it provides an easy entry to many other disciplines, such as philosophy, science, geography, or sociology. Sources in history are so vast as to include anything produced in one specific period. Paintings, diaries, newspapers, sermons, political discourses, inscriptions, and so forth. So it is a good starting point before any further specialization. And therefore, I think it is essential that historians should not be too much specialized in one field in order to still be relevant to non-historians. This is quite a challenge that we have to face nowadays. The second point I would say, I think it provides a critical mindset to simplistic ideologies or views of the past and and also of our time. By reading and interpreting thousands of pages, it helps us to classify ideas, to deconstruct argumentations and rhetorical conventions. It provides a safe distance from the flow of constant news, which incapacitate us to take a long view on things and on politics, of course. And also, this sense of perspective is essential in the current, one might say, tyranny of the instant. So the world we have lost, to use Peter Laslett's title, mm-hmm. is essential for us in our future.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think it's very interesting the fact that you said that historians have got to avoid becoming too specialist. Mm-hmm. As it seems to me, as a budding historian, that seems to be the inverse of what seems to be happening, is you're ending up with almost hyper-specialisation, mm-hmm. where historians will study one tiny little fragment of history,
yeah.
and one tiny little sector really, really deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And it always says that historians shouldn't be doing that, you should be keeping it broad. And
yes, I think it's essential in the training of students to have a broader approach to history, so that it's not becoming a too secluded field. And also, historians need to speak to each other, even if they are coming from different periods. And this is quite challenging nowadays when you have so vast amount of printed books on each subject. And this is a general issue, I think.
I agree. You mentioned earlier that some of the early books that you loved about history were about Vietnam.
Yes.
So how did you go from being really interested in Vietnam to Jacobite family histories in the 17th century?
Yes. Well, for a start, I wouldn't call myself a sort of specialist in Jacobite studies. I'm just using certain sources which happen to be written by some Jacobites.
Okay.
But I'm not into the Jacobite studies. Well, it's true that I first started being interested in contemporary history, and I start a MPhil in the years before the First World War, and I found the experience quite stressing and quite overwhelming, because there is so much media coverage on contemporary issues, and so much confusion between proper history and memories from certain part of the population who are expecting their own narrative to fit into the historical framework. And I think it creates a pressure which is quite difficult. So I think I sort of ran away from this contemporary period to find a sort of shelter in a less polarized world. So the world I study, which is the 17th century, and more generally speaking, the early modern period. The 17th century, which is a century nicknamed in France the Great Century, Le Grand Siècle, after the French king, Louis XIV. So he's a king, though he's sitting in between the 17th and the 18th century, his prestige, which he made himself, the fabrication of his reputation, his posterity, when he was still alive, entirely composed one single century. And so I found also this imposing monument of the Grand Siècle a bit too imposing for my taste, and I decided to cross the channel for a more stimulating approach of various issues such as diplomatic history, social history, the world of the elite, and the question of the early modern state.
That's really true. So something I hadn't thought about until you mentioned that before, is when you talk about doing World War history, is the fact that the pressure, because I think in modern history there is the fact that most people have got narratives or ideas of what they think World War One is. So as a historian, you don't really have much space to really question these established narratives.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the 17th century is, you've got a lot, as you say, you've got a lot more freedom.
Well, I think the advantage of studying English 17th century from a French perspective is that I don't have any connection to the debates about the Stuarts or Protestant or Catholicism. It's just so distant from the other side of the channel that I have sort of I'm more free to do whatever I want. Whereas if I was studying the French 17th century, I think I will have a certain pressure to follow a certain path. So it's quite interesting to be able to find a remote period and also a remote country in order to try to build new path, directions.
That's a really good point again, is that sometimes you do need that distance. So as you're becoming, it's quite a big question now, but as you've developed as a historian, what are some of the historians or scholars that have influenced you or either thought, I'd like to be like them? Because in France you've got a very rich heritage of 17th century, early modern scholars.
There's so many authors which have been influential, and probably I will start by the experience of reading Fernand Braudel, who is a early modern historian from the 50s and 60s, and also his work on the Mediterranean area. I think his writing is amazing, and he turned a maritime space into an epic experience, confronting Venice to Istanbul, Spain to France, high politics of Philip II, two more modest actors such as sailors, merchants, and I think he managed to create a fascinating narrative which has a very influential impact both on seminaries teaching and on sort of academic research. So his influence was very vast. He broached upon so many subjects that I think it was the first time I was overwhelmed by the sheer quality and the sense of synthesis of an historian. I would also probably need to mention Lucien Belli, who was my supervisor and who introduced me to the sort of a new way of tackling international relations in early modern Europe, to see diplomats not only as commissioned by the kings or by a republic, in the case of Venice or Holland, to do certain things, but also as representatives of a wider society. And I think this approach, which is mixing political history and social history, was a very pioneer one in the 1980s. And in his books really influenced my work. And I should also probably mention non-French academics. It would be rude not to mention native speakers. So I could mention a few academics I met throughout my researches who came to our French Anglo-French seminars in Paris, such as Michael Braddock, Tony Clayton, or Perry Gossi, and they have been very influential in my understanding of early modern England and the way one should see as a specific theme in order to understand a very confusing period, early Stuart period. So that would be my pick if I had to choose a few.
It's a good pick. It's very interesting. Thank you for your time, Stefan. It's been very enlightening for me.
It's a pleasure.
And good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.